Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Creekside Room, Barbara Sittler is speaking about the awkward problem of aging. So let's listen in on Barbara.
Part of this interview, he says, let me see. Gave advice. I thought I had it marked here perfectly. There's one thing right here. I can't find what I was going to tell you. Part of what I was going to tell you, but he says in the earlier part of this that if he had any advice to give to those who are clergy, members of any kind of a community, intentional community, members of congregations, is that he said, I would begin to start speaking about aging earlier in my ministry. I would speak about it often, and I would speak about it from different perspectives.
Tell us, what was his vocation?
He was a theologian, a Lutheran theologian and pastor, but mostly after 1940, late 40s, he stopped as pastor of a church and then became a teacher.
He was teaching college.
He was teaching in seminaries and then the University of Chicago Divinity School. Now, he did a lot of speaking engagements as well and kept his ordination, but he wasn't a pastor of a church. Okay. For those with an interest in the issues of aging, I end with an admonition. See that you come to terms with death while living, and not with a shock while you are dying. Go to the aging, go to the dying, sit in the chair next to the good ear, enunciate consonants percussively, listen, and remember them back into identity. So that's not the only reason I'm interested in this, but I thought it was an important thing to be brought up to all communities that profess to be inclusive communities. And that's why I entitled this, I'll pass it around, is also, before I go on, there's also another book that I found at the bookstore here. It's called Setting Limits. It's not exactly on this topic today, but it's about the whole week's worth of topics. It's Medical Goals in an Aging Society. It's by Daniel Callahan, who's the director of the Hastings Center, which is a center that spends a lot of time dealing with health, medical ethics, aging. So I'll send it around this way. If you want to look at it, this I found in the bookstore, and I think it's pretty good. There are a number of books in the bookstore, by the way, that look pretty good. I entitled this program The Awkward Problem of Aging because as I experience conversations about aging, the whole process of my own aging, the aging of my parents, people around, the people who I love around me who are getting older, we are very awkward in how we deal with this. We're very awkward with those people who are getting older. We're very uncomfortable in talking about the topic. And as a church, I think we have to re-examine our theology very carefully because I think that this sort of cuts across a problem that certainly exists in the United States society, that sort of our complete death-denying culture. And I think it cuts across some of the basic truths that lie within the gospel. So what I'd like to do first is to just bring out some facts about those who are over 65. First of all, I would like to preface this by saying that aging is a normative condition for all human beings. We're not talking about a special category here. We're all doing it. We all will do it. It's a constant thing.
That's not true. We won't all do it, but the alternative is not to be alone.
All right. Well, we all age from the moment, unless we die the moment we're born.
What I'm suggesting is coming from my own self. I can remember driving down the freeway crying about 6 months ago or so, remembering now my husband wanted to get to be 55 and never made it.
Yeah.
So when you say we all do it, we all will do it, some of us may not get that much older.
Right.
That's a fact.
Right. Some of us won't. Some of us will die very early.
Is that we won't be.
Yeah. But I'd also like to constantly hold in there that aging is something that starts from the moment we're born.
Yeah.
That there's
but
that's quite true. Most of us are living longer and longer lives. In the year 1900, there were 3 million people in the United States who were 65 years or older. By 1940, that had gone to 9 million. By 1960, it was almost 17 million. By 1980, it was almost 26 million. By the year 2000, it's projected that there will be 35 million people, representing 13% of the total population. By the year 2030, it's projected that there will be 65 million people over the age of 65, who will represent 21% of the total population. So we're talking about a very large group, membership of our population, overall population. It is also something I think that is important to bring out that most people over the age of 65 are not living in nursing homes or care facilities. At 1987 terms, 2% of people over the age of 65 were living in nursing homes, from 65 to 75. That grew up to a high of 23% by the time you were 85 or older. But that's still not the same as the common vision of people who are older are shipped off into nursing homes and that's where they live. That's not really what we're facing. Part of the reason that that's true is because we're all healthier. We're living longer, we're living healthier lives. What's also true is that we're living in less and less traditional arrangements. I know for people in my own generation, there are many of us who have not been married or have been married and divorced, who live in group homes. So we're not going to be looking at the traditional view of people getting older and either living with their children or living in a nursing home. There are going to have to be a lot of different arrangements made, and that's in itself awkward. We don't know what's coming. We don't know how to handle it. Another positive aspect of people who are older is that they have a lot more free time. Most of them have a lot more disposable income. They have many fewer demands, the practical nature on their time, and so they are people who are poised on the brink of having a lot of time and ability to do things without a lot of demands to prevent them from doing them. Now, when we talk about aging, and anybody wants to say anything anytime, just interrupt. I'm going to go on for this a little while, but not. I mean, I want you to interrupt me whenever you want to, and I won't plan on taking up this whole period of time. It seems to me that the thing that aging means to all of us most is that it represents a whole series of losses and a series of diminishments of what we have seen ourselves to be. We see it as increasingly limiting our lives. We're limited by the prospect of our own death, the death of our spouse, the death of our friends. The death of our community becomes smaller and smaller simply through attrition. Sex lives are pretty much disoriented if our spouse is gone. The horrible statistic is that there's 150 women to every 100 men over 65, so things aren't just happening the way they used to. That's a loss. We are more dependent. We are less independent. And that dependence or the loss of independence is a very serious constriction on who we see ourselves to be. Our whole understanding of how we look changes. I know that's something that troubles me. I'm aging. I see it in the mirror. I'm picking up books on menopause and trying to be very cool and calm about it and trying to anticipate hot flashes with a lively air of, oh, what an experience that will be. Yeah, it'll be an experience all right, but things are changing. Our whole, the way we see ourselves and define ourselves in terms of our physical beauty or youth or snap and vitality changes. We lose the fresh blush of youth. We lose our significance to society as we lose our jobs or retire, as we move into other aspects of care. We now are seen by the geriatric service. We're senior citizens, we get discount passes on the bus, those are good things. But society starts to see us as being less and less productive, less and less significant. Frequently, because of physical problems or income difficulties, we will lose the home that we have lived in for many years. Maybe the children have moved away, we don't need that home any longer. We move into a smaller place, but that's a big loss. We lose our career. And one of the first things we say to each other when we meet each other is, "Hi, my name is Barbara, and your son said, what do you do?" Well, when you lose your career, you lose one of the most significant ways of defining yourself, ourselves, to each other. That's a big loss, and particularly in this society. With all of these losses comes a profound sense of loneliness and of an inwardness. Loneliness that's not always bad. What is that?
It's a drag right by, and it needs to be put out.
Should we open that window?
I think it should be put out.
I'll open the window and see what it can do. But it's just going to count another window on the frame.
Is there a screen on it?
It could get out if I could get through there. There's one person here who might be able to work this out. Yeah, I don't want to mash it because I'm afraid I'm going to. Okay. Gaucho is here. He knows everything about this stuff. And I think we also lose, because of all these losses, we lose an opportunity to contribute, which is also a further way of defining ourselves. And finally, there's a real disturbing problem that's on the rise, and that is that elder abuse is becoming a larger and larger problem in society. And not only are we losing our own lives, but we're losing the capacity to defend ourselves against those who would cause us harm. All of these losses, I think, come face to face with specifically, or the uniquely American pathos that make productivity the god of our society. If we produce, if we can get up every morning and contribute to the gross national product or to something, we're good. When we cease to produce in meaningful and defined ways that this society has set up in extremely limited fashions, we have lost our significance. We've almost lost our right to be considered meaningful members of society. That, I think, is the biggest problem in the whole issue of aging. And one that I think the church finds itself in a unique position to confront and to challenge. And this is not just for those who are actually over 65. I think in this society, increasingly, we are running up against this very, very difficult position of finding ourselves worthwhile only so long as we produce in ways that sort of the larger, the sort of the banal outer culture sees as legitimate. This troubles me. It troubles me for myself, it troubles me for my nephews, who somehow don't seem to find that it's okay to just be. It also cuts very much to the core of a central Lutheran doctrine, which is that we are children of God, we are graced by God, we are given the unmerited we are given the gift of love and grace without earning it. It's a given gift of God. and it is something that is to permeate our lives, that understanding. And yet, even as Lutherans, many Lutherans, you know, what do you do? How are you going to do it? What, you know, I have nothing against works and social works and using our faith in ways that enrich social life. But I think it's very important to understand that the central tenet of our tradition is that we are justified by grace, and that productivity is irrelevant to that very basic love. And that as Lutherans, for those of us here who are Lutherans, our commitment to each other is to mirror that sense of love and to mirror that commitment of God to us, and therefore each one of us to each other, regardless of what we can or cannot do. Nevertheless, I think there are some things that we as a church can do. And I really would like to see us do these things, because I think there's some very simple things that we can do which will affect two outcomes. One of them is that as a church, as a community that's gathered together, presumably bound together by love and with a commitment to justice and service, there are some service areas that we can identify and participate in. But because we see the whole aging issue as an awkward one and one that we have put outside our normal sphere of worship and existence and community, by doing these things, we reintegrate many different layers of our community. We reintegrate many different ages and groups of people back into a more whole unity of people. So I'd like to bring up some of these. I'm sure there are many more. So if you think of things, add them on in. One of them is adult daycare. I know my church has a real big fellowship hall. We don't use it all that much. We fill it up on Sundays. We've got a lot of programs in there. But as the community is aging, we need places. We need to have to be able to offer those spaces to other programs. We could host them. We could run them. We could fund them. Whatever, maybe we don't use our own space, but we use part of the collection to set up adult daycare spots, which are actually, I hate the word adult daycare, it always sounds sort of Twinkie-like, but I know there, some people, some of them are really wonderful. They're places where you have estate planning, the elder hostel meets in them. There are places for people who are not doing well nutritionally, so they get really good nutritious meals. They can have health care come in there. Many congregations are setting up a parish nurse program. Parish nurse could be there, could be a sort of a central location where in needs more specific to an older population are consciously addressed and sort of administered through a sort of a center. There are real concerns about what happens physiologically to people as they age. One of the problems that people encounter is the whole question of dementia. That's a terribly frightening area. I've been working in a hospital with a geriatric service for this past year and have been studying this and intend to continue working with it. My information is by no means, therefore, exhaustive. But I do know enough about dementia to know that dementia is a very different thing depending on how you get it, where it comes from, and how it's treated. Dementia can be a result simply of poor nutrition. It can be a result of a sort of an inharmonious balance of medications that you have to take for other physical ailments that can be adjusted and altered. It can be the result of a stroke, and frequently temporary. It can be the result of early Alzheimer's. These are all different things. The manifestations are frequently similar, the causes are different, and they're very frightening, particularly if they have to be faced alone. And it is the ultimate loss if you feel that you're starting to lose your mind, or if your children start to watch and say, what's happening to mommy or daddy? This can be looked at much more clearly, and most people can get some very significant relief. There are general physiological limitations. For women, one of the biggest problems is osteoporosis. A little gym, buying three or four of those exercise bicycles with immovable arms, put it over in the corner of the fellowship hall, have people come in and work with it, monitored by the school, by the parish nurse, have a blood pressure screening, all of that. Things that are working on physiological difficulties that can become problems, but don't have to become quite as large problems, particularly if people band together and have a little fun with it. I think it's also important to recognize that we Lutherans tend to be white. We tend to be Norwegian, Swedish, German, Northern European. We are Americans, obviously most of us in this country. We can take some very significant cues from the ethnic groups that surround us. See how they incorporate the aging of their society and culture into their life. Many Spanish and Black families see the elder members of the family as being the repositories of the wisdom, of their traditions, and of the family memories. How do I know who I am? Tell me the story again, Grandma. Tell me how we got here, where we came from, how we did that, what was the tradition? Pass it on to me. Tell me what I should do. Talk to me about what you did. Age has some very positive elements to it. I'm even finding it my relatively young age, when I'm not too pompous and tell my nephews, do this because I told you so, I can sometimes really know that I can tell them to do it this way, because I know it. I know that will work. I know it over time. People older than me can teach me. We've lost sight of that, something very, very important. Eastern religions, Eastern cultures, see phases of life as being dedicated to different kinds of activities. And those people who have grown up, married, raised a family, then leave the chores of that, the burdensome thing of when their children are grown, then they devote themselves to real spiritual work, to enlightenment, to wisdom, to real reflection, and adding to the whole spiritual character of the community. These are the people who carry the heaviest burdens and give the greatest gifts to the life of the community so that it can go on. Our group of people tends not to make use of the gifts of the older people in our community. We tend to see them as burdens, as people who require more care, whose diminishment characterizes their entire identity to us. We see them as people who have to be cared for, rather than as repositories of the wisdom of our clan, if it could be. These people who are older, people who are over 65 and not working any longer, are still friends, wives, husbands, lovers, workers, communicators. They are the caregivers as much as they are the care recipients. And I have received a great deal of care from those who have been older than me. And that care is of enormous value to the kind of person that I am, the kind of person that I will be, the kind of pastor that I will be, the kind of aunt that I will be to my nephews, the kind of the generations that come down. If they give me love, I can give it on. There are two interesting little developments. One, probably all of you know about, is the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons. I will remind you once again that as of 1980, there were 26 million people in this country over 65, all of them who could vote. By the year 2000, there will be 35 million voters over the age of 65. The American Association of Retired People has made some very creative use of that voting block and of that lobbying block, and have made some very significant changes in how
they are for only people over 65. People over 50 can join.
Really? That's wonderful.
You didn't know that?
No, I was told 65 for voting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
As a voting member. That's what
husband,
I was told.
My husband joined when he was 50.
That's great. Great.
And I am a member and I'm not yet 55.
Wonderful. Well, I will put the, I'll put the address up there because that's really terrific. But it's a good thing. It has done a great deal for people over 50, mostly for people over 65, however, in terms of legislative changes. But it's, I think it's a great example to see that, that people who are older are a very significant portion of our community and of our society. The other development is something that's you probably won't have heard of. It comes out of the Park Ridge Center also, that book that I'm passing around. I went to a conference earlier this year, the on spiritual communities. It was an aging and spirituality conference. And this fellow, Drew Leder, L-E-D-E-R, is working out of the Park Ridge Center, and he's very interested in building and in how old communities could be worked out or developed, arranged so that blocks of people who are facing, who feel that they can no longer live on their own or choose not to, they see that these losses are, creating an environment in which they're becoming more and more isolated. These people want to band together through their income, combining their maybe some, all portion of their incomes, their clout, their Medicaid benefits, their spiritual connections, their community connections, are coming together to form spiritual communities, and they are subcontracting out to different, to healthcare institutions, physical therapy institutions, legal things, purchasing blocks, what have you, anything they feel that they need, so that they are maintaining or attempting to maintain control of the important parts of their life, and rather than going into institutional settings that are going to sort of run roughshod at times over their longing for independence and continued autonomy, they're keeping charge of these things more, and they're basing it on sort of a spiritual connection. Now, I'm sure there are other groups that are doing this that are not hooked together through religious or spiritual linkages, but the Park Ridge Center is investigating those. So if any of you know of any, you can get in touch with Park Ridge. You can keep an eye on Park Ridge to see what's happening in that direction. It's a very interesting idea, I think. Now, I have some ideas about what I think the church could be doing. And what I would like to say that I think that the church should be doing things in the area of aging for the church's benefit and for the community's benefit. This is not something, oh, how can we help those poor old broken down old people? Absolutely not. There is a vital core to our community that we're leaving out and that we're all moving into. And we all will be. If some of us are there, we'll be replacing you. It's going to keep on going. But the church is bereft of its resources insofar as it fails to tap into the use and the wisdom and the sheer community and vibrancy and character of those who are over a certain age. As I said to begin with, I think that the church should start speaking about aging, about death, about loss, about diminishment. We should face the fact that we are very fearful about the end of our life. We are very fearful about death. That hampers each and every one of us. Insofar as we are afraid of looking at what's coming, we can't deal with it. We can't incorporate it into life. I think that we have to, as we speak about that, confront squarely the sort of the consumerist mentality that dominates our society. When we cease to be consumers, producers, young and foolish and 90 pounds, we no longer seem to be of value to the society. It's a ridiculous thing. There's a couple people who are 90 pounds. The rest of us are very different ages and weights and talents and ideas. Let's start bringing back those values that we really see in our heart to be fundamental to living as people who care for each other and as reflecting the real fruit of the gospel. And remembering that the gospel does hold up for examples those who are meek, those who are in need, those who are filled with humility, those who long for justice, those who respond to each other as neighbors and in love, regardless of who they are, giving as we have been given. I think we should create opportunities within the church and within the church service to start really confronting the issue of age in more positive ways. Why not have services that are completely run by and directed toward issues of aging, of loss, of creative later life? Have people who are members of our community who have the freedom and the time and the wisdom to think about what life is like in the later years, create a service once a month, once a season, depending on how many older people there are in our congregations that could change. I think it's especially important for the children that we do this. I think that the church can recognize that in our aging community, we have an unbelievable resource that we should be using. People who are retired are retired teachers, doctors, lawyers, mechanics. I learned drywall from Lars at our congregation, and he didn't have a thing to do, and I desperately needed to know how to do drywall taping. No problem. He even brought a six-pack of beer with, because drywall can be awfully drying, as he said. But we have resources. We need to use those resources, not only for ourselves as a congregation, but for the community. If we're not going to set up a senior service center, we can find out where that one is and make sure that our congregation or our community is sending people to it. How much time do you have? Let's start putting it in there. We could have after-school programs, and the older people could be mentors to children who need help after school with homework or just mentoring. The family situation in this country is also very difficult. It's very fragmentary. There are very few grandparents around. Children would really improve, could use that kind of nurturing and nourishment and steady presence in their lives. I also think, I've mentioned this before, but older people can tell us our stories. And that's something I wish I had gotten from my parents before they died. I wish I'd gotten it from my grandparents. But I need to know not only the story of my family, I need to know the story of my tradition. I need to know the story of those who came before me. We all need to know those stories, and we need to know them from the people who are holding on to them and who have lived them, and we need to give those back. I think we also need to insist, as we send our pledges to the Synod, that our clergy be trained in issues of aging, pastoral care to the elderly, in medical ethics, in bereavement, in grief. In these issues, we need to insist that those dollars that we send in to train our seminarians are used to reflect a rich ministry. And we need to attach a little note to that benevolence check. And I think that we can finally hold some regular classes on all kinds of things. Estate planning, as I said before, on advanced directives, on will planning, and not just, as I suggested this at my congregation, and what happened was a representative from Lutheran Brotherhood came over, set up a table, and showed us how to do our estate planning with a nice little chunk for the Lutheran Church. I have nothing against that, but that's not what the idea was. The idea was to talk about how we plan. I mean, it was a much larger issue. Talk about advanced directives, living wills, what it means to plan for the end of your life. How are you going to work this out? Are there divisions in your family? How are the kids going to handle it? Do you have a family to pass things on to? What are the needs that the older people as a group need to have addressed? And what is the standard regularly set up form wherein we can talk about these things? I've talked enough. Anybody have anything to say or comment on what I've said, or contributions, further ideas? I think this is a lot of hooey.
I liked your comment about Lutheran Brotherhood coming in there and blowing their own horn.
Yes. Yeah.
But they probably were invited. It's probably the easiest way to do it.
And they are one person who can do it.
But, you know, I think that many people in almost every congregation, there is someone who can do this. Mm-hmm. Any lawyer.
Attorneys are very
hard to do it. Yeah, there are almost always an attorney, or we can access an attorney, or we can say, you know, I'll get my company attorney to come in here. We've been giving him a lot of work. He or she can come in and talk to us about living wills for coffee hour. There are ways we can.
When you were talking about various programs that we could have in our churches, one of the things that is sort of a limitation in a sense is the government is very careful about what they allow within our churches, you know, working with children and anything. You have to be certified, and you have to have a particular kind of a person who is certified, and mm-hmm. you have to meet all kinds of standards before you can have
yeah.
these things go on in your churches. So it's not a simple thing. We've been investigating in our church, working with children, and you go through so many government hoops.
Yeah, that's a good point. In my church, we have an after-school program that's licensed. But there's also an opportunity then to say, well, it's going to cost us too much to upgrade the facility, or it just doesn't make sense. Why don't we contact the school district and ask them where they'd like us to be? You know, change it around a little bit. We can't have them come to us. Where's the need? You tell us. Also, I think that there's a problem in churches are all really great once you get into them. But there's a whole lot of people who never walk in the door. And they don't know what's going on. They're not going to walk in the door. We need to be out in the community. And these are very, very good ways in which we take our commitments and our faith out into service wherever it's needed. And I think that's very, very much a part of the gospel, is that where is the need, that's where we'll go.
I liked your idea about a special service done for older people. We have a youth Sunday,
mm-hmm.
but never anything for the older people, or to show the young people, the children, that old people are still useful, not scary.
Right. The congregation I'm a member of apparently used to broadcast on Sunday mornings. They had a Swedish service. And that was years ago. I wonder what that was like. They could certainly show us. It would be kind of nice. I bet they'd love to do it, too. But has anybody here had a service that was intentionally designed for the older group of the congregation, older members?
A church I used to work in had every once a month we had a service and then luncheon for the elderly and the disabled, and we would pick up people who weren't able to come to church services and give them enough time and help them to come into the
mm-hmm.
church, and it was worked very well, very much appreciated.
Now, was that a separate service?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It was a midweek.
Uh-huh.
Thing. I mean, you know, a particular day.
Part of me agrees and understands what you're saying, and part of me rebels totally. You know, one of the things that I'm sitting here thinking, and one of the things that I have often said, I'm a pre preschool teacher, and I've done this for a number of years.
Uh-huh.
And I rebel against going to centers for older people, and they are isolated from the children. And it seems to me that churches have a tendency to sometimes isolate age levels.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm convinced what we need to be doing is putting them together. And I'm not so sure that we want to have services that are specifically geared for older people.
Not for. Not at all for. If I said it that way, I didn't mean that at all. I mean for us, but done by older people. I'm sorry if I gave the impression anything that I'm talking about is to integrate back into the community.
I have said for years, there is no way I'm going to live in a community where I'm not surrounded with children. I want to be a surrogate grandmother to every
absolutely
kid that comes along.
Yeah, I think that that's really important. I had hoped I was getting that across. The sense that I think that that's what we are doing, is we are separating and almost ghettoizing those who are older, and you know, arranging separate services of multiple varieties. It's an estranging idea, and I want to bring sort of, we are all naturally living here together. It takes an effort to separate us off. I just want to reverse that effort, bring people back together. Absolutely. That's in the whole storytelling, telling us, bringing us back into a real community, a sense of all ages learning from each other.
I pictured it just like our Youth Sunday, that the youth put together the church service, a regular church service for Sunday morning.
Right.
That why couldn't the older people do the same thing?
Some of the nicest things is, you know, tell us how, you know, some of the old hymns, maybe the old ways of doing things. I'm sure somebody's got an old, you know, I remember when my dad was a pastor, we used to always joke at him because he was wearing his dress on Sunday, and he had that black thing that buttoned all up, and then this, he had like his angel thing on top of that, and, you know, he would go crazy because he'd come home in the middle of the week and we'd be running up and down the hallways with his angel gown on, you know. Oh, kids! But, you know, bringing back some of the things, both the physical manifestations of an era that was part of how worship used to be, as well as some of the old hymns, and just the service actually done by people who are older, for all of us. Making accommodations. Making sure that we have these little hearing, little boxes. You can get pick them up when you go into the congregation, into the actual church, and you can. And the pastor has to wear a little clip-on mic. This is for those people who can't hear very well. It's very unobtrusive. You just slip it in your ear. We have a hookup. Well,
something even more simple than that. My mother is very hard of hearing.
Uh-huh.
She does a lot of lip reading, and she commented about how difficult it was when the pastor stood and he ended up with his face blocked by the lamp.
Oh.
That's something that's really simple, but a lot of congregations are unaware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ear thing helps, but only to a point with her.
So she actually relies more on the lip reading.
On being able to see the face of the person who's doing the speaking.
Oh. Has she ever told anybody?
I think she did that. Well, it turns out that particular church that she was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I think setting up a forum and finding it, like a hearing from groups of people, say, well, what do you need? What do you want? What could make things easier? What's up?
But she has said, for example, she's almost ready to quit going to church because it's very difficult for her to understand anything that's being said.
Yeah.
And that disturbs me, that concerns me.
A very simple thing that some congregations do is just to have like the Word in Season or whatever devotional book we use, to get some copies in large print and have them. We always have them outside on the table, and then have some in large print so that people who need that can also have a devotional book that they can use.
That's a great idea. At the hospital, they have a patient representative office. And I would go down there, and they said, well, just come down whenever you need anything. I needed large print books. Couldn't get them.
Boy, our library's got a lot.
Yeah, but in order to get from the library, yeah. Now, I could get them from the library, but I couldn't get them from the library to the hospital without going through a very lengthy process. And I wanted a book today or tomorrow. You know, so that was difficult to do. And I could have checked
them
out.
They've got the mobile libraries, but that's not connected with the church.
Yeah, and it wasn't connected with this hospital either.
Yeah.
That was a very difficult thing to do.
I'm kind of curious in your conversations in this area, if you have any light to shed on the subject of older persons who are living together but who are not able to be married because they'll be penalized by the federal government and will lose.
Yeah.
Income.
Yeah, they'll lose their income. Yeah, for sure. Well, I don't have any light to shed on it in that. It's a fact that happens, and it's too bad. I think that there are a number. The only thing I would say is if the church were to speak out against that, I would be very, very distressed. But I don't. I think that's a governmental payment, fee for service kind of thing. That's not anything that we can do so much about, except that we could acknowledge it. We could probably bring it up, acknowledge it, say this is unfortunate that it has to happen, but we welcome, you know, we could treat couples who are living as married, acknowledge the fiscal necessity that requires this sort of subterfuge, but not make any negative comments about it at all. And we are all voters. You know, we can support the kind of legislation that promotes greater justice for all groups of people, you know, and sort of look at these things, and we can ask, so what are the provisions here? Doesn't that seem a little strange? You know, we've all got a telephone and we can call our senators and congressmen and ask them for a little bit of explanation, but aside from that, no, not really. Are my comments about this sort of the difficulty or the awkwardness of this whole question of aging, are they resonating with any of you? Have you found in your communities or churches or from your pastors or friends or within your own hearts or experiences that these issues are difficult ones? People seem to be reluctant to talk about them. I know I get fearful when I think about aging myself, when I think about what I've seen in the lives of the people that I care for. I suspect that I'm not the only one that feels that way, who's had those experiences. For those of you who are older, have your children been reluctant to talk with you about your plans for the future, about, you know, say, oh, no, you're not old. You're just fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. We're all doing it. Or have your congregations, pastors, preached on this topic?
I just called Winnie the old lady.
Hey,
you're the old lady in this group.
Yeah, I mean, what have your experiences been?
Great.
So you, well, that's it.
That's Winnie.
There you go.
Winnie makes it great.
Yeah. Well, do people make any problems for you?
Pardon?
Are people making any problems for you?
I don't let people make problems for me.
You got a little more spunk than
yeah, for sure you
do. Well, Winnie, when are you going to give a service?
And I said, I worked hard getting these wrinkles, and I'm not going to change them.
I think that's one of the gifts that we can give as we age, is to our kids and to anybody we meet, is how in our life we've experienced God, and how in our dying and our aging we've experienced God. And to, you know, when our kids, my kids say this to me, oh, Mom, you look just as young as when you were married, and they always want to keep me young. And I think that my gift to them can be theirs. Now, this is a natural process. There's nothing wrong with it. And in the way I age, I give my children a gift to look at their own aging and their own life. The things that are important to them really makes life look wonderful no matter at what end you're living at, you know? And that's, I think, what I hope to do.
Yeah.
So that it isn't a scary thing. And I think your dad's comment is wisdom. Deal with your own dying, with your own life as you're going through it. Not wait for some magical moment when you're going to be ready to think about death. I mean, it's a foolish thing to think like your husband didn't know when it was coming. All we have is the right now. And I'm reading this wonderful book that someone shared with Gary and I, and it's called Refuge, and it's by Terry Tempest Williams, and it talks about how she has, it happened her mother died. Her mother is dying of cancer, but in the process of dying, she's giving Terry so much of life.
Yeah.
And it is an absolutely beautiful book. This is her mother asks her to help her God. And it's just a gift we can give. And reading about it helps, I think, helps us talk about it.
This past year has been the best year of my life, surrounded by all these very old, mostly very sick, dying people who have seen that this is, it's focused their attention on things. There are a lot of things that just don't make a damn bit of difference anymore. But what does is the meat of life. And the conversations that we have had, the reflections that they've passed on to me have been of inestimable value. And I really think that, yeah, I mean, you're not letting anybody get in your way? Excellent. That is just fine, because I don't intend to let anybody get in my way. But you know, the other side of it is, though, that sometime, you know, you will need help.
And get on the phone and call and ask for it, and you always get it.
That's great.
Good.
See, this is great.
Family, friends, the church, all I have to do is call down there.
There's a wonderful scene in Forrest Gump where his mother's dying.
Uh-huh.
And he walks in and says, "What's the matter, Mama?" And she says, "I'm dying." He said, "Why?" "Because we all do."
That was a good show.
No big thing. Just dying.
Everybody's talking about that movie.
It's a wonderful movie.
Yeah.
And well, if you have a faith to live by, you don't worry about death.
So,
I don't know. I don't know. I've got a faith that I hope I've got some faith, and I do use it to live by. But I worry about it. By golly, I sure do.
I think, I guess for me, I worry less about the actual time of death than am I going to somehow be a burden to people on the way to that point.
Yeah.
And that's why I've tried very hard to provisions, and particularly since I am now the only parent that my children have. They are both grown up, but still there's a certain amount of, having lost my father this year, I realized that it's very difficult to lose a parent. And, you know, they already, I can vividly recall just not too long before my father died, saying to my older daughter, and then realizing what I'd said, you
just left
your father. For almost a year without yours.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, but it was, we just hugged and cried. But
That's a natural comment.
Try really hard to not, I think the key is that you want to be not to be a burden to other people. And I think part of what you're saying is with to help people realize that even though we might have to do some things that they don't necessarily want us to do, we do it willingly and lovingly because they give back to us in terms of wisdom. And
even if they don't, because there will be times, I mean, I this year was a wonderful year for me. There were a couple of people who didn't give me back much of anything except, get the hell out of here. Never needed a chaplain before, and I sure as hell don't need one now. Well, you got one anyway, you know, because they would say, well, you're the chaplain. You go in and find out about next of kin and all of that. And there are some people who didn't give an awful lot that I wanted to receive. But they needed the care as well. So I think we have, and it's, I really think that this is tied into the absolute fundamental principles of our faith and of the gospel, is that we are given, we are loved. It's the gift of grace. And if we can but imagine that through just encompassing those with whom we have been living and from whom we were born, that's an enormous challenge. It's also an enormous gift to us and to our children, to our world. I don't put this in, I view this very selfishly. You all got what I want. So cough it up, right? If there's anything I can learn, if you can tell me anything I want to say to all these people, please tell me.
Do you know, that's one of the gifts of aging, though, that no one can tell you God. It's something you have to look forward to.
Yeah.
You know, and until you've suffered a loss, you can't really tell anyone what it's like, but once you go through it, you know if you've lived through that. And God's promises that you've heard people tell you work, and you don't know about it until you experience it. Then when you do, you say, oh, I see that promise worked. And so you can trust that the next tough place you're going to come to, that promise is probably going to hold true again, and you just get stronger and stronger through some of those hard times. But you can't know it until you're in them. And it sounds like some of them you've already found to be true.
Yeah. There's
unanswered ones, but those.
Yeah, but I think we're all witnesses. We're all witnesses. And I think the more we can receive from the witnesses who have gone before us, the better we, the more we have to pass on, the better we have to pass on, the richer. And plus, there's nothing like a good story.
That's why I think that we have to encourage people who have lived a long time to tell us how they made it to that point.
Right.
Well, I was going to say one of the things as you were talking about things that churches could do. One of the things I can recall, for example, in our own congregation is that we had a building which we ended up tearing down. And there were people in our congregation who could remember the procession to that building, and their voices were lost when they died, and we're forever, we have lost them. And what we need is to take some of our older people who have been in the congregation for many years, and with things like cassette recorders and so forth like that, we need to get their stories. How did you come? What are some of the things you remember about this congregation?
The children could do it too. You know, hook up the younger people in the congregation.
Right, I've always